This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing, my chance to talk with artists, policymakers, and performers. To hear their stories, what inspires their creations, what decisions changed their careers, what relationships influenced their work. My guest today, Ellie Kemper, is adorable. Even she's admitted that she does closely resemble Strawberry Shortcake. Most of us were first introduced to her as Erin, the eager and friendly receptionist on The Office. These days, she's the star of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix, now in its second season. Ellie Kemper says she plays exaggerated versions of herself, so you'd be correct in assuming that she is kind, optimistic, and self-effacing. Consider her theory on why she's been successful in Hollywood.
I have a very large face that is moon-like and sort of friendly and rube-ish. You know, I think I look like someone who...
So it's your rubish, moon-like face that's responsible for the career you have now. Is that what you're saying?
Actually, yes, I think so. Because all the characters I've played sort of play up that aspect of me. And certainly, I think I do. I am sort of naturally cheerful and sunny, I think. I am
healthy.
I think healthy, yes. Not manic.
Yeah,
and certainly, certainly I get in bad news
like manic,
anyone.
Yeah.
Yes. And that
You're
is not,
manic.
I'm not manic. Thank you. Oh, good. Now it's confirmed. Maybe if I were a stand-up or something, maybe that might be, you know, different.
But you didn't do stand-up.
I did not do stand-up.
So what was the beginning of that part of your career?
The beginning of my career was in improv. So I started doing improv comedy in college, and I felt like I was good at it. And that was the first time I felt like, I can do this. This is something that I feel a connection to, and not only do I feel a connection to it, but it's something that I want to pursue after college is over. And that's how I started. I started doing stuff at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York and the People's Improv Theater.
But it started in college?
Yes.
At Princeton?
At Princeton, yes.
Where'd you go to Princeton to study?
English. I didn't go there to study English. I got there and decided I'll study English. But I actually played field hockey my first year. Well, I was good in high school, and
right.
I was captain of my team, and then I went to college, and I never played. I sat on the bench the whole time. And I one day worked up the courage to—it was like Rudy— to ask the coach, you know, like, Coach, you got to put me in. Why am I not going in? And she said because I had the tools but was having trouble building the house. Yeah, I never saw her take off her sunglasses.
And yet you still have a sunny disposition about everything.
I do. I could not.
People were trying to chop you down.
I know.
But you didn't let them chop you down.
I didn't let them. No, I quit, in fact.
But you went to Princeton not knowing what you wanted to study? You decided to study English once you got there?
That's right.
Did you have an idea what you wanted to be or do?
No, and I regret that because I think that it's so nice it's helpful if you know in middle school or high school what it is that you want to do. I think that just helps to make decisions for you earlier.
But you didn't know you wanted to be an actress then.
That's right.
You did 4 years at Princeton.
Uh-huh.
And graduated with a degree in English.
A degree in English.
And then you went to Oxford.
I did.
For a master's.
For a master's that I did not complete.
Right.
But talk about—
Was it in field hockey?
I was like, let's give it one more go.
Right. I'm not done.
I'm not done yet.
Put me in, coach.
Put me in, coach. I've still got those quads. I have very strong quads, quadriceps. But I quit that then after a year. I went to school for a year and decided— This is not satisfying. I am not an academic, okay? So that is not what I wanted to pursue. So I moved back to New York after a year.
Wait, you're not an academic, but you went to Princeton and Oxford.
Yeah, but I'm not.
How'd you get into Princeton and Oxford if you're not a student?
I got in on pluck.
Verve.
How do you get in? I'm well-rounded. I'll say that. I think that I felt like, okay, well, I have strengths in different areas. So I felt like, okay, that's, I mean, I'm not dumb, but I'm not. I just spoke at Bucknell the other day, and I was surrounded by professors. I'm like, oh, these are academics.
Now, forgive me for saying this, but you come from a very prominent family in St. Louis.
I don't know.
Your family, somewhere in your family, a big organization, correct?
I'm trying to answer the question and not sound like a jerk. I don't know if prominent is a word.
Successful.
I'd say kind. No, yeah.
Very successful business.
Yes,
so, are you the weirdo in the family of the four kids? Like, anybody else in show business? You told your parents you're going to go take your Princeton and Oxford degrees and go be on TV. Were they like, no?
No, on the contrary, they did not flinch. I think my dad sort of thought, oh, she'll try. In fact, he said, like, try this for a year and see what happens. Now, you know, well, actually not in your case because you were employed right away. But after a year, for most people, nothing really happens. What your first year trying to become an actor in New York City. But nobody ever discouraged me from doing that. My mom is an actress. I mean, she
Your mom is an actress?
She stayed at home and raised her four children, but in high school and college, she's a performer, I guess is what I mean to say. And she was always in the college plays.
She's funny.
She's very funny. Both of my parents are very funny in very different ways. But my mom's closer to me in terms of she's more animated, I guess, and energy-wise. She was Miss Adelaide in Guys and Dolls, you know, that type of lady. But right. They were both very supportive. And my younger sister, Carrie, is a writer on Silicon Valley.
You and she are writing a book together.
Oh,
it hasn't come out yet.
It hasn't come out. I have to tell you, no, we've put that on hold for now. But I want to return to that. But I personally want to write a book, a book of essays, just my own. Some nonfiction.
You still write now?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
What little time you have, you write.
I have a lot of time. Thank you. I think that's a compliment that I wouldn't have time, but I have a lot of time. So I've been trying to write in the meantime because I think that is something that I've been saying for 10 years that I want to write a book and I haven't done it yet.
When you did The Office and you came onto The Office, you're a cast addition, which is always a wonderful thing. I had that happen to myself, actually, where I was a cast addition on a nighttime soap opera.
Yep.
I did the show Knots Landing, which was a huge hit on TV, and I came on and I was like, wow, this is great, because all of you have done all the hard work and built this like cathedral of soap opera.
Absolutely.
And I'm just going to walk in and do a couple of numbers here and leave. When you were cast addition on the show, how did that happen? How did they find you?
I met with Greg Daniels and Mike Schur, who Greg Daniels adapted the British show to American television. And I got that meeting through my agent at WME. And
so you were with WME and working a lot before?
No. Well, this is what had happened. I had auditioned for Saturday Night Live. Maybe you've heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you've hosted it
many
times.
That old chestnut.
And I auditioned. I obviously did not get the part, but it did help to put me on, you know, people's radar, I think. So I had just signed with a manager prior to that audition. And then I got meetings with all the big agencies. So I signed with WME. And they were developing a new show, which turned out to be Parks and Recreation, which I think is what I was initially being considered for. And I even read for a character that's not in Parks and Recreation, but I think was maybe going to be. And then my manager called me to say, first of all, I didn't really know it was an audition. I thought I was just, I don't know what I thought I was doing, reading a script with Greg Daniels. And then my manager told me, and he's like, look, I don't know how to say this, but you didn't get the part. And I was like, I didn't know there was a part that I was
it's
trying.
Okay.
It's okay. I don't know. Sometimes they have a way of making me feel worse like than I
right.
do.
When we tell you bad news, we want you to feel bad.
Yeah. Play the part.
Yeah.
Be crushed.
Yeah.
So then I was crushed. But then this part of Erin Hannon came up a few months later. And because I hadn't gotten any job on Parks and Recreation, I, of course, was available. And so I auditioned for that. And that's how I got it.
And it's kind of like in that world when you get into that wheelhouse with them and they know you, they're going to find some way.
They're
going to always call you when they've got something
for
you.
I hope so. Yeah. Yeah.
No, that, they will.
The introduction was the main thing. Just as meeting Lorne Michaels was enormous on
sure.
its own. Being
yeah.
in a room with, oh my goodness. Yeah.
Now, when you come on The Office, you started season 5?
Yeah, the end of season 5.
And you did until season 9.
Yes. It was, yeah, exactly. It was initially written for 4 episodes. It was a 4 episode arc. And then Erin stayed on. She became the new secretary.
Did you enjoy it when you did it?
I remember it like a dream. I think I enjoyed it, but it was the same thing. I thought, these guys have the train on the tracks. They've done all the hard work.
Right.
You get in there and you don't make a peep. You just do.
That's so funny.
Right? But right. it's true. It's like, don't make a splash. And then, And then I did enjoy it. I think the very beginning was just like a little bit in shock about
sure.
of what was happening.
Catching up.
Yeah. Because I was a fan of The Office. So it's surreal to be interacting with people who you've only seen on television,
right.
you know?
Right.
Especially when I look back, I'm like, that was the greatest job. It was so
good
nice.
Good show. So you come on and you keep your head low. You keep low.
Keep
stay
low.
Stay low.
Stay low. Stay low.
There
yeah.
with all those stars of that comedy show.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that
and where are they now?
Yeah.
They're not doing Kimmy Schmidt. They're nowhere.
Oh, they're all thriving. Yes, they are. Mindy Project's my favorite show ever. Other than some other television shows that both of us have worked on.
No, but why do you like Mindy Project?
Oh, it's so her. It's her distinctive voice. It's so supremely funny. I don't know if you watch it or not, but the lines are just like so polished and honed and hilarious. And I just think it's so unique because it's Mindy's voice. I love it. And it makes me cry. So it's this very funny show. And then this last Christmas episode, I texted her. I'm like, I'm in tears on the couch. It was so, it's touching. That is hard to pull off.
What did you watch when you were growing up, and what was TV in your life when you were a kid?
Do you know what? Okay, I didn't watch a ton of television, in fact. We watched Seinfeld as a family. That was the show we always stopped on Thursday nights to watch, which I'm surprised because Seinfeld is a little, it's a little risque. My family isn't.
It's a little urban.
Well, it's a little urban, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm so shocked that like four single people on the Upper West Side would resonate with an entire country, but it did. And my family's conservative, not crazily so, but like I remember not knowing what like Elaine's diaphragm was. I was like, yeah. Her lungs.
You still don't know.
I am still not entirely sure. The contest, I had no idea. Right. And nobody explained it or asked. So that was fine.
You know what it means now, don't you?
hot dog eating, right? It was who could eat the most hot dogs.
Right.
I think I know what it means now. But we always watched, my sister and I always watched Letterman in high school mostly because it was on later.
What did your parents do for entertainment? Were they entertainment people? Or did your father stay home and, like, read the Wall Street Journal?
No, my parents love going to the movies.
They
no,
did.
He's not a foreign affairs man. They love going to the movies. Every Saturday, they would go to the movies, I think. And I feel like we went when it was appropriate, if it wasn't an R movie. My mother loves television, so she watches
Her share.
And my dad also. They both love television, in fact.
Your dad a jock? Is he a sports guy?
Yeah, he was a sports guy. Yeah. He still is. He works out every day. He's very regimented.
And you have two brothers?
I have two brothers. Older brother John, younger brother Billy.
What do they do?
John is a banker. He lives in St. Louis with his—
Of course he is. God bless him.
Bless him. He has his three angel children who I could only—
He's
got it. These children— He is already, the bar is so high that if and when I have them, good luck.
Where would this world be without the Johns in our family?
I don't know. John is like a rock. He is a he's unflappable. And by the way, infinitely funnier than my sister or me, who both technically work in comedy. So,
but he still wants you to give him a free subscription to Netflix. When you want
yes, exactly.
He refuses to pay for it.
John, it is $7.99.
And your other brother's what?
Younger brother Billy is about to go to. He worked at Yahoo for a while, and he's going to go to Kellogg Business School at Northwestern in the fall.
So the men are in business, and you and your sister are in the business.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
What is she doing now, your sister?
She's writing on Silicon Valley on HBO. She wrote on The Office while I was there as well, which was—
Your sister was writing on the show when you were on there?
Isn't it?
What was that like?
That was incredible. My sister and I get along very well, luckily. There's a four-year difference, and, you know, we would have lunch together. She wrote, I think she joined in season six, I think, maybe the sixth season. And she is so funny, and it was a joke.
Is she like a moon-faced hayseed, too, like you? No.
No, she's gorgeous.
She looks like Audrey Hepburn.
Oh, she looks like Audrey Hepburn. Actually, no, seriously, though, you just nailed it. She has dark—
I never met her.
Dark, I know you
no,
don't.
She
has raven hair. Her face is—
She has raven hair.
Her face is out of—
I love raven hair.
A Renaissance man. I'm not an academic. I don't know art. But it's out of, like, a classical painting. She's beautiful.
Where'd she go to school?
She went to Stanford.
My God.
My gosh, I know.
Everyone's so pathetic and stupid in your family.
Well, yeah, everyone is pretty smart, but I don't think you have to go to those colleges if you're smart. I think plenty of smart people don't go to those colleges.
When,
right?
I'll let you say that.
Yes, it's true.
Now, when you finished The Office, like, what was your feeling? Like, when I did 30 Rock, I remember I thought to myself— It makes me kind of get choked up. I could cry right now when I say this. But, well, because it's really hit me more and more as time has gone on. Because it's like, it was a home. It was home.
Yep.
Because the movie business is so gypsy-like, you know what I mean? It's so nomadic, and it really makes me cry. And I cry a lot. But anyway, do you cry a lot?
I cry a lot. I cried the other night. What happened? I think it was, it was an email. It was an email about plumbing. For this apartment! I started crying. But that's a different—
Did you cry?
Yeah, but it feels good, and then it's over.
Stop. What was the plumbing email that made you cry?
Well, it was about choosing fixtures.
And you cried because—
Because I don't know about that. I'm not an academic. I'm not a plumber. What am I? I'm nothing. Give me the lines, and I'll say
I'm not an engineer, damn it.
I'm not an engineer. And I get frustrated very easily. It's always been this way. I remember crying doing homework. I don't get it. And just, I get stressed out easily.
Does your husband handle some of this stuff?
Or do you
wear the pants in the family?
No.
Because you're the star. You're a star.
I'm not a star, but I...
When you're on my show, do me a favor. I need you to pretend you're a star while you're here.
Perfect.
This is a show where there's some quotient of stardom.
Star power.
We have academics who come on.
Oh, I know you do.
And we have people who are like in public affairs and education. But then we have people on here who are film and TV stars, and they need to kind of act like one.
I am the star in the household and in the world. And but Michael Komen is his name, my husband, and he is eerily calm. Not eerily, comfortingly calm. So he is a good sort of—
You said eerily. Don't back up. What's he doing?
Because
Is he home all day?
He's a writer.
He's a writer. Yeah, who is he writing for now?
He created the show Nathan For You, which if you haven't watched it, you would love it. It's on Comedy Central. It's stars this guy, Nathan Fielder, and it's basically, he's a small business consultant who goes in and tells businesses how to improve their business. But his ideas are inane and crazy, and I really do think you would like it.
I want to be on it.
You should be. Well, you can't be on it. It's all real life people. So he goes into real life people and
Can I go with him?
Yeah, you should.
I could go with him.
Now we put it out there. Yeah.
Okay.
That would be something.
We're dancing around why you cried over the plumbing.
Yeah,
email.
We are. Because it was night, so I'm always a little more emotional at night. I'm tired from the day, as we all are. And I get, here's what I'll say. I think that I'm sort of emotional. I think I'm a little sensitive. I think that I'm a little tightly wound. For an actress, I am like, the most normal I've ever met.
You're like walking the park.
Right? I just mean that I don't have neuroses that are crazy, but I do cry, for example, about something that seems too much to handle at the time.
Okay, now you still haven't answered the question.
Yeah, why did
What was the plumbing issue? What could happen plumbing-wise that would make you cry?
It was a decision I had to make.
Because you weren't choosing the fixtures.
It was three different fixtures had been emailed to me, and I don't notice differences between
Kimmy Schmidt doesn't do fixtures.
She does. It's not that she doesn't care. It's just that I don't have a strong opinion about them. And it made me cry. I guess the reason I cried is I was exhausted and didn't want to make another decision for the day.
And did you choose or your husband chose?
It still hasn't been decided.
It still hasn't been decided.
No.
Would you like me to come over and decide for
please,
you?
Please.
Down there to this new address? Now, you get out of the office, and how long is the gap from that to Kimmy?
Well, in fact, this is what happened. As soon as The Office was over, I filmed a pilot for NBC that did not end up going forward. It was called Brenda Forever. It was very funny. But because that did not move forward—
Why do you think it didn't go forward?
I really don't know because it's like throwing spaghetti at the wall. You never know what's going to stick and what's going to resonate with audiences. Frankly, I didn't know how audiences would respond to Kimmy Schmidt. It's very weird. But so this show, for whatever reason, the network decided we're not going to push it forward, which happens all of the time. Well, you know what? There was a threesome scene, an interracial threesome. Maybe that was too wild back then. It was like 3 years ago.
You did this already?
The pilot for it.
It's
never
a comedy.
Aired. It was a comedy. It was very funny. I played a orchestra conductor. And I was mean. I really liked it.
You were a mean
orchestra
conductor who was in an interracial three-way.
Yes.
I can see clearly why I didn't get picked. This is just asinine.
I mean, isn't that bizarre?
I mean, the bizarre is mild.
No,
term.
Listen, I think you would think it was funny.
An interracial threesome with a bitchy conductress?
The maestro.
With a bitchy maestro?
She was duplicitous. She was evil. Like, she was bad, this character. But isn't that the new thing, anti-heroes?
What was the show about?
It was split. It was halfway. So Brenda Forever, we saw half of the show. Brenda was 13, and that was played by, obviously, not me, by a younger actress.
I
could do it. The Rube. Could we stretch a face a little bigger?
Let's get Pie Face
Maybe
in there.
Get pie
Change
face
your
in
hair
there.
A little. Change Pie Face's hair.
Pie Face will be up for it. It's a compliment. Mm. But then the other half of the show was me as an adult. So that's why it's Brenda Forever. It intercut between the young girl and the old girl. And it was so, I really think you would like it.
Can I see it online? Is it available?
No, it's nowhere. But there's DVDs of it. I'll get you a DVD.
Get me a DVD.
That and Nathan
I
For You.
See.
I think you would like it. That was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun doing that. But, you know.
You did one episode, the pilot, that was it?
That was it.
What did you do?
Then I thought, what do I do? My agent, Richard Weitz, who is Tina's agent, he and Robert Carlick, he said the pilot, you know that, my pilot was not going forward. He said, get drinks with Tina and Robert in New York City. Talk about—
Did you?
Yes.
You had drinks with the two of them?
Of course I did.
So the first seed of Kimmy was you sit down with the two of them.
Yeah.
Now, had you met either of them before?
No.
You never met them?
No. I'd seen
Tina. That's a pretty intimidating thing.
Oh, dear. I was so nervous the whole day. I didn't know how to calm myself down.
Yeah.
I mean, I was so— Yeah. I was so anxious.
It's like being a lawyer in front of the Supreme Court.
Absolutely. Stop. And do you be funny? Do you be smart? What do? You let them talk, I think. That's what—
They don't want to talk.
Well, they're sick of talking.
Yeah.
When
I was around them, they weren't very talkative. You know what I mean? They wanted to write.
They wanted
to talk as little as possible so they can get back in the writer's room and write.
I said, they don't want to waste their time with me. Yeah, it was on a Saturday night. I remember. I was like, I'm taking up time on their Saturday. They just keep it short.
I would talk to them and be like, yeah, great, girl, sure. Oh, sure, great, boom, gone.
I'm sure that's not the case. I'm sure
they were writing. They endured me.
Well, I feel like they endure me every day. So this was the beginning of the endure. I felt like, just don't be crazy, right? Just try to be.
Where did you have drinks with them?
The Carlisle.
Ooh.
Ooh. And I was like, I'm going
to order. Your west side is heading over to the east side.
Oh, my God. I mean, true. And the thing was set up the day before. So talk about, I'm an anxious person. So I was like, hyperventilating. And then I thought, I'll just order whatever Tina Fey orders. So I did. The first thing I thought was a glass of white wine.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, white wine. So do I.
Exactly.
I drink the same white wine. You drink Gavi de Gavi? So do I.
That's so great. I like Google her. Like, when
that's
it,
so great.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. What a coincidence. And that was fine. You know what? I was so relieved when I left. I was like, well, that was fine. That was not scary.
Was it fine?
It was. We didn't talk about anything of substance. It was just small talk, chatter. Again, the constant nagging notion.
And they knew who you were. They'd seen you in the office.
They had seen the office. Okay. That's right. So,
and they told you they wanted you to play Kimmy.
No, they basically said, we're developing a new show. We don't know what it is. But good to have met you.
Interesting.
You know, I think it was a general introduction, although maybe it was for something
more specific. How soon after that did you get the script for the pilot?
We met in May, and then I met them again in July, and they pitched the actual idea to me.
What'd you think?
Well, I thought they were joking because the premise of the show.
Oh, buried in a hole.
I know. And I was like, and I have said this before, but I went home that night. And again, I had to calm myself down. I was like, get in the tub. I took a hot bath. I was like, they were pranking me.
They're super smart people, but their imaginations are fucked up.
That's everything is right. Yeah. They're brilliant.
Their imaginations. Yeah. They're brilliant. Beyond brilliant.
They imagine great things. And because
they're great things.
Because
they're great fucked up things.
They are so brilliant. I thought for sure they're testing me to see if I'm smart enough to know that they're joking, you know? Like, I put it into a mind game right away.
Oh, my God.
I know. And then they weren't joking, because that is the premise of the show. And then, so that was in July, and then I saw the script in October, I think. And then NBC picked it up for 13 episodes, I think. Oh, I know exactly when, actually, on Halloween of that year. So from Brenda Forever to Kimmy, it was April to October. So that's pretty quick.
So when you got a pilot, or did you get a couple of scripts first?
Pilot only.
Pilot only.
Then we waited, even though it had been ordered for 13.
Okay.
So we shot it the following spring and then waited 4 months and then shot the rest in August. And that was filming.
And as you were shooting it, you were like, oh, God, this is so insane.
Insane. And also,
But did you realize that in order for that to work, this is the funny thing.
Yeah.
See, because if everybody's cynical, like sometimes, did you have to like hang out with people at UCB? And in order to fit in, pretend you were more cynical than you really were?
Oh!
Like, would they say like really cynical things and put people down? You were like, yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah. He's a douche. Did you have to hide Pie Face under a basket?
But the problem with Pie Face is that it's always with me. So it is hard. If I say he's a douche, are you going to take me serious? Like, are you going to be like, oh, yeah, she means it?
Probably not.
Yeah, so that's the problem. It's like, you have bright red hair.
You are Pie Face.
I am Pie Face forevermore. So, like, trying to say something
like— It's like being Mickey Rooney.
Yes.
This is not— What can you do about it?
You can't.
Just go with it.
So you embrace it. So there is— I don't know. I think— Yeah, I can't get away with that.
So you get so you get there to do the show, and again, I'm not saying this. You realize this is one of those things—the brilliance of the show. Because I've watched a lot of Kimmy lately, is that it is your tone and your warmth, and that helps.
Well, I was trying not to interrupt you because I didn't want to interrupt the host, but that is much more credit than is due. Thank you very much.
Right.
I think the writing, of course, as it was on your show,
we owe them
is so.
A lot.
You owe them.
You owe them everything.
You don't need to dress up anything because the lines are handed to you, pristine. I was about to say not a hair.
We're
on
lucky.
It. Yes,
we're lucky.
Very. Oh, I think about that all the time because there's so many dopes out there, and you would take a job, whatever you would. You would take a lot of jobs to make money, to earn a living, to keep working. But then you get to work on this job, which is truly the genius minds of comedy. So it's extraordinary.
Now, the show is, you did two seasons.
Yeah.
And you're going to go into a third season. You got picked up for a third season.
Yes.
What did you do in the time in between the two? What have you been doing?
I'm not like you.
Not writing the book, obviously.
Not right. I'm not as industrious as my bosses are. So they, Tina went off and made a movie. Robert went off and wrote that. You know, me, I feel like, I felt like the press took up a lot of the time in between. I felt like, and Titus and I, brilliant Titus Burgess, who plays Titus on the show, we talk about this. We're like, I have spent more time talking about the show than we spent filming it.
Yeah.
It's, but
the,
that's
the promotional
necessary
requirements
part.
Have now become absurd. So in between, you did a lot of press.
I just truly feel, I want to ask you about Letterman, but I'm going to ask that later, I guess. But
ask me now. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to ask, like, would you ever say, you were a guest, you were one of his favorite guests, of course. And would you ever say, that was a pleasure for you, I'm assuming. Like, that, you didn't think of that as work.
That was, no, that was not a chore at all.
That was fun. Now, would you feel like I need to make these stories really good? Like, would you feel nervous at all?
Oh, God, yes. Well, you know, he never hid the fact that he was restless.
Yes.
He was a very restless man.
Yes.
And he was very, and I don't say that as a pejorative. He was very restless. Mm-hmm. He leaned over to me one time and said, oh, God, I can't tell you how much I want to thank you when you come here, because sometimes this just is really tough.
Oh, it must be.
Meaning people come on, and he has to pretend they're special.
Oh, you, and you,
and you're hard-pressed to identify why they're special.
Well, he must have looked forward to, I mean, someone who is just going to,
the people that
were, have a conversation
who could talk and he were good guests for him, he really looked forward to coming, and he was very kind to me, very kind.
Well, of course he was.
Super kind.
My very favorite thing, though, is when someone goes on the show who you can just tell from the start he doesn't like, and he does not. I think he got better at this as time.
Yeah.
I mean, but
he leaves
me critiquing David Letterman. I just mean that he put on a face, I guess, a polite face more often, like later on. But when Starlets, who he just didn't care about, would come on, he just he let
them hang out to dry.
Yes, which is great.
So during the break in Kimmy, you only did promotion.
I honestly feel like all I did was promotion.
You didn't do a movie.
That's not. I did not do a movie. Did I? No, I didn't.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. What an arrogant show business card that was to turn over. Did I do a movie?
No, I slipped my mind. No, that's
great. Oh, yes, I did that movie.
See, I'm a star.
Oh, my God,
I do so
star.
Many movies. Let me toss my long Angelina hair.
My raven hair.
No, the only reason
let's try that again. Did you do a movie?
I did not.
Okay. That was the correct answer. Now, did I?
No, the reason I question, my memory is so bad. I'm 35. There's no reason for my memory to be hazy. It is so bad that I couldn't remember if I
Joan
had or not.
Joan Crawford Kemper. Did I do a movie? I don't remember.
No.
I was on Adnan Khashoggi's yacht for so long.
Oh, my gosh. You can count the number of movies I've done on one hand. So I couldn't I don't know.
What's the goal when you finish a show?
Okay. I like balance. And I realize that, like, I crave that now. At this stage, I don't know if that's good or bad. I thought I was like a driven person, and then I met Tina and Robert, and I'm like, oh, I am not as hardworking as I thought I was.
But Ellie Kemper is just about to start working harder. She and her husband Michael are expecting their first child. Explore the Here's the Thing archives, where Kristen Wiig talks about breaking her fans' expectations.
The audience very quickly puts you in a folder. Like, they know you how they first knew you. I'm Kristen from SNL, or a comedic actress, and people are always so surprised when I want to do dramatic stuff. Really?
Yeah.
Like, you really want to do that?
Take a listen at heresthething.org. This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. My guest today is actress Ellie Kemper, the star of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, now in its second season on Netflix. Ellie plays a former cult member looking to restart her life after being held for 15 years in an underground bunker. Both Kimmy and Ellie appear to have an eternal optimism that lifts them above all the obstacles in their path, or almost all of them.
I have a problem limiting ice cream intake. That's so dorky. That's just so such a gross
response.
When you
say problem limiting ice cream intake, are you like a Brando level or are you at my level?
I
wasn't at a Brando level.
You were? Did you?
I wasn't at Brando level.
Oh, you, okay. But
you know he was an ice cream addict.
No, I didn't know that.
He would
pull
into Gelson's and go into the parking lot and eat a half a gallon of ice cream. Oh, yeah. In the car.
Why am I just learning this now?
I really don't know. I'm stunned that you're that out of it. In terms of, if you say you have an ice cream problem.
Was Brando. I didn't. You would think I would have connected with other. I can't.
He was the Charles Bukowski of ice cream.
I had no idea. I can't start a pint without finishing it. That's just like a pint.
Okay. Now, I had a period of my life, and I did get really sick from this. I gained a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. I found that I was pre-diabetic. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're so fit, and you're so trim, and you never work out probably, do you? Do you ever
work out? I work out every day.
You do?
I thought it was just like a St. Louis thing.
I think I'm from St. Louis, and we're just naturally damnable. We're naturally whippity.
We're hearty, whippity
We're hearty, whippity, pie-faced people. I eat a pint of ice cream a night. Yeah. I come home at the end of the day, and it was my reward. I was stressed out.
Yes.
And I would turn on the TV. I'd watch Turner Classic Movies or cable news or something.
I recognize that experience so closely because it is my own. I justify to myself, I'm like, well, it is better than Jim Beam. It is better than drug. I mean, but it is a drug like any other.
It is. What's your favorites?
My very favorite is Ben & Jerry's, but that is because they're so readily available
at
every bodega. The Tonight Dough.
The
Tonight Dough is what it's called. Maricone Dream. Now I'm only naming late night hosts, but I do like those flavors a lot. And just cookie dough. And then for Häagen-Dazs, it's just vanilla chocolate chip, which went off the market for a while. Can you imagine?
Like, my favorite when you were really, I knew I would really cross the line when one time I went to an ice cream place and I had 3 scoops of ice cream and a vanilla shake to wash it down with.
I've been there.
I said, I couldn't make up my mind. I said, I'll have both. And I deserve it, damn it.
Yes, you do. Well, see, that's the
thing. I work hard.
I remember there's a scene in Miss Congeniality and Sandra Bullock's like, it's time to get chip-faced. And she's talking about drowning her, one of the great lines of cinema.
It's time to get chip-faced.
She's drowning her sorrows in mint chocolate chip. And I will come into work the next day, and Liliana and Ariel, who I work with, do my hair and makeup on the show, I will walk in, and I'll be like, I'm a little bloated today, like in my face. Yeah. It's not wine. It's not whiskey. It's I'm chip-faced. I'm hungover from ice cream.
What does your husband do?
He's weirdly disciplined. He will eliminate sugar for months at a time. Is that weird? And then he'll go back to it. But when he starts, he can't stop. His thing is he loves licorice, which is somehow, I mean,
I hate him.
He has very old man, like he likes sour candies.
Yes.
And like a
Where is
hard
he from?
Candy. He grew up on the beaches of San Diego, but he is not a beach bum.
Yeah.
He's very indoor kind of guy. We met because he wrote on Conan O'Brien when Conan used to be here. So he's like a very bookish type.
I miss Conan.
Oh, I miss Conan.
What's Conan doing? He's out there in L.A.
Conan and Letterman. Oh, that's what I would watch while I was drowning. It was so pleasant to eat a pint of ice cream and watch David Letterman and let the day melt away. And now I can't watch him anymore. So I just eat the ice cream in the dark.
I just eat the ice cream. Yeah, I watch reruns of Letterman.
I'm not kidding, though. I do.
Get the Dick Cavett box set.
I need to get that.
I'll get that.
I'm only recently discovering Dick Cavett, like his shows. And my gosh, his show's so fantastic because they're just talking.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about nothing going viral.
Different style.
Yeah, totally different style.
Different time.
Yeah.
Now, so when the show is over, and it's not going to be over for a while, I'm assuming you're going to do this for a little while longer.
I hope.
But when the show is over, especially people in comedy land, when the New York gig ends, try as they might, they get out of here and they go to L.A. Do you see yourself going to L.A. to live?
I would like to avoid going back to L.A.
Why?
Because I get depressed there. I realized that recently, even though my sister, my gorgeous sister, you'd think she would light up the whole city for me with her beauty, but she lives there, but I get, when I'm not working there, it's depressing to me. I can't figure it out.
In a way that's different here.
Yeah.
Because I feel the same way.
The whole time I was in L.A., I was working for the office. And
I
then
get depressed when I'm there.
I get, it fills me the minute I land. In New York, you are depressed in a different, it's like a very invigorating way. You know, you're angry instead of being low. You know, you're frustrated and you're crying, but and it's like full of passion. In L.A., I just feel like, I'll think, Ellie, it's a gorgeous day. It's 75. Go for a walk. The walk depresses me because no one is walking.
I know. When you lived there, you shot The Office where?
In Van Nuys. A studio. I don't think
Your
it had a
studio.
Name.
Yeah.
We
like
were the
an
only
abandoned
people there.
Place where they used to put dry cleaning
That's
chemicals
exactly
there.
Where we were.
Where they put Perk.
Yep.
Where did you live?
Hollywood and Highland.
No.
That's right on Hollywood Boulevard.
You lived like a record store
Oh,
or something.
It was horrifying.
Oh my God.
We moved there because I felt like, oh, this is like New York. It's a high rise.
You bought into that old facade, right?
Oh, yeah. The guy next to us.
This is Bleecker Street.
Yeah. That's literally, I was like, this will be hopping. The guy next to us, our neighbor had an ankle monitor, which I didn't, and we never knew what it was for. One night I came home and he's like, come on, just be a good sport. And the girl's like, that hurts. And he's like, it's just a taser.
Oh, my God.
I don't know what he was doing. Mm.
But when you leave there and you go to New York, it's just easier. You know what I mean?
I think everything here in New York is
it's just easier to.
I think everything. Well, for someone now, I'm not, but for someone like you who is very recognizable, very prominent, you must have trouble going places. I would imagine in New York, it's somewhat easier. I feel like people don't want to be caught recognizing you.
LA's easier because you're in a car.
Well, see, it's a different situation.
New York has changed too. Well, New York has changed too because people are not as cool as they used to be.
Well, everyone has a phone. If someone asks you, and I have only done this, look, people are not clamoring for my photo, but if they do ask, they will ask at like the gym or something when you're sweaty. You look terrible. Yeah. I said this once. I said, I'm so sorry. I look disgusting. Would you mind if we don't do it? And she goes, no, you're fine. I'm sorry. And like lifted her phone to take it. And I can only imagine that this is to the 5,000th degree with you. But I started to say, but you're not sorry. But I didn't say that. Yeah. But I wanted to.
Now, Kimmy Schmidt.
Yes.
So John Hamm played the head of the cult.
Yeah.
And that only appeared in the show in flashbacks. Mm-hmm. You'd flashback to Kimmy.
He does come on at the end. There's a trial. And he, I know. And talk about the only person who could have played it.
Sure.
He is so, okay, so you're describing this guy who presumably raped these women. He kidnapped them. He's a sinister figure. Then whose face do you attach to it? John Hamm.
John Hamm.
Well, that lightens
the
load.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works. And so for whatever reason, you watch this guy and you don't feel disgusted. I mean, it's this, I don't know how to describe it. I've described, John Hamm's from St. Louis, which is where I'm from.
No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I'll tell you something, which I always feel like John Hamm must be sick of me mentioning this. He went to my high school. He's 10 years older than I am. And he came back and taught high school for a year. He taught our theater class.
No.
Is that crazy?
Did you take theater class with him?
Yes. I took one semester. He taught me the improv portion of our class. Is that crazy?
But then the wheels turn, and eventually John Hamm comes back and teaches acting at your class. And then he's guesting on your show, baby. That's right. Don't you forget it, John Hamm.
John Hamm, make it
John
quick.
John who?
I may or may not have a movie to shoot. Can I tell you, filming with him, that was so intimidating. Because you always retain that dynamic.
It.
Talk about crying. There's a scene in the bunker where I really did feel like, it's John Hamm. And like, it was so powerful to me that I, who normally can't cry in scenes, I started crying.
Now, the character of your father has never been on the show, has he?
He has not been on the show.
Or even like a weird uncle. I could come and play your weird uncle. I'd love to come on and play your weird uncle.
Will you email them?
Yeah, well, I've already told them.
Okay.
I told Carl
like
that.
Okay, good.
Now, number two, who do you take advice from?
Oh, I take a lot of advice from my husband.
You do?
Oh, he's...
You trust his opinion.
289.
He's sharp.
He is very wise.
Now, why 289?
I don't know. I kept going up and up. I was like, more than 100.
That's pi divided by the number of my birthday. He and I have our own little handy formula.
Why did it come out to that? I wanted to up it. I wanted to up it from 100.
That's
the name of my book. I wanted to up it. Michael is very, as I've described, he hates it when I describe him as calm, but he just has a very level head. In fact, I think he would be a good manager, to be totally honest with you. I'm talking about a show business manager. He's just smart. In that way. But people will ask, and I don't know, well, they didn't ask you this, but people in press interviews will say, what is the best advice Tina has ever given you? Well,
Tina gave me a lot of advice.
Oh, she did?
Oh, I mean, indirectly. I mean,
that's what I mean.
Tina can tell you privately that the first year I was on that show, I annoyed them so much because I tried so hard to be funny. On camera and off camera. I tried to keep up with them. And there are people who, like Tina Carlock, Burdett, all of them, Reggie, everybody who was writing for the show back then, Volley, Tracy, Paul Appel, they're funnier on their worst day than I'm on my best day.
Well, for
they're
me
just
too.
Eighth degree black belt ninjas.
I always feel like I'm
they're
like,
ninjas.
Tina will come into the makeup room. I'll be telling some just endlessly boring story about the laundry machines in my building. It's the same thing where I'm like, don't stop wasting her time. Stop telling this story that's excruciating. And then she says one thing that's funnier than anything, you know. Well, yeah, that's very obvious. She's Ellie Kemper on Tina Fey. She's very funny.
She's so funny.
She's so funny. It's not as though she sits down and imparts wisdom. I learned so much.
I learned a lot
by
from her
example.
And Carla. The one thing I want to ask you is, when the opportunity presents itself, do you see yourself working in a drama at all and doing any dramatic films?
I think I have it in me.
So
but
do I.
I don't know if that's something that I want to do. I think that transition is hard, don't you?
I think it would be a mistake if you didn't.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you think of the idea that people come to know you in a certain way and come to expect you?
And you help them to know you in both ways.
Yeah.
Because didn't you think it was interesting to see Tina do Whiskey Tango?
She can do it.
Do you ever feel like you want to try that yourself?
The pause alone speaks volumes. I think that that would be, do you know what the thing is that I feel like when I'm being serious, people laugh. Is that horrible? Maybe we've just stumbled on something. Where I feel like if I were to be, I don't know. I would have, I could try it.
Think about it.
I'll think about it.
Think about it. Because you want to know, I think you can do anything. It's work.
I should do it. I should. After Kimmy ends.
After Kimmy. Yeah, you don't want to.
You can't mix those two up.
Just stay in the Kimmy zone?
I think you got to stay in the Kimmy zone.
You can watch Ellie Kemper in The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix. This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing.